podcast.
Welcome to We Knows Parenting. I'm Beth Newell.
I'm Peter McNerney.
We're parents.
Hi. We're married. Hi.
We got two kids.
Maven and Bryn, 2 and 4. They're almost 3 and 5, it feels like.
So we were just talking about what this episode is going to be in terms of the week, and we were had nothing.
Nothing happened.
And I think I'm so happy about that because... It's been so long, I think, since we just had a calm week where there's no big thing to worry about or have tantrum or peeing your pants in public. You know, there's just...
Yeah.
It was just a routine week. Our kids still threw several tantrums.
But that's not as many and not as big and not as fiery.
No one almost died. No one, you know...
Yeah, no one ran. Well, Bryn did run away, but I found him real quick.
He did. I guess we haven't talked about this. The other day, he didn't want to come inside or something, and then he took his artwork from daycare and threw it on the ground and stomped on it and wouldn't let me carry it inside. And it was so dramatic.
Maven had
a mirror image piece of artwork that she had made, except it was her image being like snowed on or whatever. Anyway,
he
wouldn't let me bring it in. And I was just like, yeah, you know, I don't care about that piece of paper. Like I was like, well, I guess we'll have to come back and pick this up later. So we're not like littering, but I was like, if that's the thing that's going to stop you, I'm just going to go inside. I don't.
Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't have been able to do that. I would have thrown it in the car. I've done that where Bryn's like, I don't want this hat.
But it was just, it was one of those cut your losses things where I was like, I know if I stand my ground and like, I'm like this, I have to put this in the car, put this in your backpack. He's going to flip out and run into the bushes.
Yeah. I'm not criticizing your move. I just know that I wouldn't have done it. And then I would have had to deal with the bigger, worse thing. So I think I'm just always afraid that everyone's watching me, and I still have an 8-year-old's fear of littering.
Well, I was thinking, like, in a perfect world, I was like, I'll go out later tonight after I put them to bed and like throw this away or something.
And then a storm happened.
Yeah, and then it was just like, it's actually like so far to walk at night when you're leaving your kids inside your apartment alone. Yeah.
We found it was there the next morning.
Yeah.
Very wet, and I threw it in the car, and we took it. I don't know where it is now. It might still be there.
Yeah, our cars. When you have kids, your car becomes full of so much more garbage because you just can't, you don't have enough hands.
Oh, yeah.
To keep a car clean.
It's been pretty clean. I made a point every time I get out, I throw one thing away, and it's been all right. It's gone through horrendous, like, disaster periods. So anyway,
other than the Bryn, you know, throwing multiple tantrums and everything, we had a pretty calm week.
Yeah. You know, so if you've heard our Born in a Car episode, you might have learned that we were given a free 3-year lease on a Honda CR-V for having a baby in a Honda. And when we went to go get the car, they also gave us, it was like a care package, is all of this stuff for like keeping your car clean so that when if you end the lease, you want to return the car, it's not damaged. And that includes like 2 seat covers for car seats. And like a thing that hangs off the back of the driver's seat with pockets in it. And I tell you what, those things are great. I mean, you don't realize how dirty your car gets with children. I mean, you think you know, but you have no idea. And those things have made all the difference. So that's my big plug for car seat covers. Maybe we should get plastic on our couches too. You know, that'd be cool, right?
Great idea.
Cool. We came home today and there was a giant package outside of our door. And I opened it up. Well, Bryn opened it up. And there was a giant metal pole in it. Like, that you special ordered for, I guess, some curtains on our windows because there's a weird corner. And it's very cool. And Bryn, just like, he's like, he didn't say this, but he was like, Daddy, please, please let me crack my head open by grabbing this thing that's three times as long as I am and as heavy as I am and just using it like a sword and dropping it on my head and on my sister so that we all die. Please, please let me do that. And I was like, no. And he's like, you're the worst.
They're like so getting into everything right now that there's just like nothing safe.
Okay, here's an actual thing that happened tonight. I come out of the kitchen and I'm going to go to the bathroom. Bryn comes, it's very close to bedtime. And I've said, like, we're starting bedtime, here it comes. And Bryn comes running out of our room. And he goes, Daddy, do not go in your bedroom. There's no reason. And I was like, ah, well, you know what? I wasn't going to go in there, but now I feel like I should. He goes, no, don't turn off the lights. And then he like was pulling me with all his might. And I was like, all right. And I was like, I'm going to give him time. So I like help
Maven
brush her teeth.
You can't get mad about messes. You have to be like, wait, what happened? Okay, this is going to have to be cleaned up. Or like just like, try to calmly explain, like, you ruined a thing.
Oh, I didn't get upset. It was too funny to get upset. And I was like, literally, I got to help Maven brush her teeth. So you're brushing teeth. And we came back in. And I was like, we got to turn off the... I thought he was trying to watch TV. So I like turn off the light switch that turns off the TV, which is not convenient to have a light switch that turns off the full entertainment system. But and I go in there and I was like, what are you doing back here? And he's like, the cream cheese is not missing.
He's literally the worst liar in the world.
I was like, you drew all of the attention to this and you gave me all of the details. And... This reminded me, I once in college, I came back to my apartment that I shared with a friend and I like got a new shirt or a new jacket I was really proud of. And so it was like part of some conversation. So I opened the door and I could hear like, oh, my friend's here talking with somebody. And they were there talking and I like quietly like took off my jacket because I was going to come in and be like, hey, it's the shirt I was talking about. And I turned the corner and
this is such a dorky entrance.
Yeah, it really is.
You are Ross from Friends.
This is just it's applicable to the story because it explains why I was so quiet entering. And I turn around the corner and before I can say anything, they both immediately see me and they're like, oh my God. And she was like, you're not lame. And I just froze. And then without saying a word, they both then just recounted to me all of the shit they were talking about me. And I just sat there and listened as they told me all of it.
Because they were like, you're not lame. You're not someone who's excited about a shirt purchase.
Because
you're cool.
I mean, I would not, the next detail will support their argument that I am lame, is right inside the door was a very big walk-in closet, which was my room. My sophomore year in college, I was a very fancy apartment and I slept in the closet because it was really cheap. So they thought I was in my little hobbit hole and like came out. And then I just listened to them tell me all these terrible things about me and apologize for it. And then I was like, okay. And then I left and went into the bathroom, like tried not to laugh. It was a weird, like, I was like, wasn't insulted because all they showed me was how guilty they felt. And then I came out and just put my shoes on and I was like, I'm going to go for a walk. And I left. And I just let them feel bad.
So dramatic.
I told them about it like 5 years later. Actually, I don't know if I told both of them. Anyway, that was Bryn.
And that's our son.
Don't come into the bedroom. There's not, the cream cheese is not missing.
That is the look in his eyes. Like anytime you walk into a room and he's like standing on the counter trying to get something, he's like, Mommy, I'm not, just go over there.
Don't look at me.
Just, If you hear a chair rolling, that is your desk chair. If you hear a chair rolling towards the fridge, it wouldn't be anything.
It's like, and when you hear me climb up here and take candy, just know that isn't happening.
Like, nothing weird is going on here. Just before you leave, could you tell me where you hid the candy? I just need to know.
Also, the biggest knife. So, guess what I found the cream cheese?
Where?
Exactly in the middle of underneath our bed. He didn't explain to me why. He just took it. It was closed and he threw it under there. And then he came and told me, don't look for it. Then I had to explain to him. I didn't get mad because it was
weird. He doesn't understand that food goes bad.
Yeah, I explained it. Goes, it's going to go bad and bugs are going to come and then mice. And then mice might get into your room. And Maven and Brayden were listening and they were horrified.
This is... So this is brings up another topic, which is one of my friends is delighted because you posted on Instagram of several things our kids had done while we were sleeping.
Yes.
And
everyone go to my Instagram and check this out. It's like seven pictures of things we've discovered in the morning.
Yeah, it's just like half-eaten things that our kids have dragged out of the fridge and like messes they've made. So anyway, my friend saw that and she thought that you were sharing all those images as if they'd happened in one morning. And she was like really delighted by it. And I was like, I had to break it to her that that was not the case. Anyway,
this was a life's work.
Yeah. But anyway, this is the thing our kids do is they get into stuff. So there is like a certain room for error in the morning in terms of like, I think I have a tendency to just lay in bed as long as I don't think they're hurting themselves. I can kind of hear what they're doing and just like.
It's like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen is they're going to find some candy and they're going to eat candy in the morning.
And the other day, Maven was out here and I think I heard her be like, ugh, milk. And she was clearly drinking like her old milk from the night before, which is disgusting, but also a lesson I think Bryn had to learn. And they only learn it through experience.
They only learn it by us not doing the dishes immediately.
I mean, we clean up the dishes pretty well, but yeah, occasionally there's a stray milk cup that you don't notice, and then they wake up before you and run out here and like get into everything.
Yeah, the thing is, they find a milk with cup in it, it's one we didn't see. So it's like under a couch.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we leave them on plain sight too.
No, we're perfect. We clean everything.
Anyway, they've been really getting into some things lately.
Yeah, Brynn was pretty cranky at bedtime, but just zero tolerance for things, and I just act like I'm not affected by it, and he's just not interested in having the fight, and so we get through it quicker, and it's been good. And then although Maven was insistent, no story, so I said fine, turn out the light, and I left.
Maven is still struggling emotionally with the concept of bedtime, like just in a big girl bed. She's like, given the choice, I choose not to sleep.
Well, what she's doing now is just whatever the thing is, her goal is to just milk it.
Yeah.
If it's like she's on the toilet and you're like, are you all done? You need toilet paper? And she goes, I'm not done. And she just wants you to like hold her dress and stand there for as long as possible.
I think you really have to understand this about her is that she's a Taurus, and Taurus people are sensual people. They value like the pleasure of different experiences. So you'll notice she's like this with food. She could eat and eat. She did this at a play date this weekend where she like ate all these people's food. And she's like this with pink and like clothes. Like if you give her a new shirt, she wants to put it on that second and like look in the mirror and like enjoy the experience.
And she's also like that with your attention.
Yeah.
Where she just wants to draw it out. And I'm laying down the law so much quicker. And then
she really has like a very funny flavor of like 2-year-old queen.
And I've been doing, I'm like, you can put on that pull up yourself or I'm going to put it on. She goes, no. I'm like, I'm going to count to three. And then she's like, she like grabs it and like moves it to her foot just so I'll wait. And she knows if she makes progress, I'll probably wait. And so she'll do this fake, going to do it. She's, and she pulled those straps off and then like try to put it on like a diaper.
So this brings us to the most annoying new habit she has, which is, and I know I did this as a kid and now I understand how infuriating it
was. She's 1,000% you.
She does this thing where she wants something, but she just wants you to know she wants something. So you ask her what it is and she goes, And you're like, what do you want? And she keeps going, and she purposely isn't saying the words like clear enough so you can hear it.
Beth, this first of all, you do this exact thing as an adult where she's like, and you go, what? And the fact you said what, she's like resentful of. And so then she says, and you're getting quieter. And you do this, obviously to a lesser degree, where you're like
this.
You're like, Peter, can you get the thing? I'm like, what'd you say? And you're like, Peter, can you get the thing? I'm like, what? And you get angrier and quieter. And it forces me to go to where you are and get close. And then you hate that I'm like belittling you. And I'm like, I literally can't hear you. You don't do this so much anymore, but you used to do that. What'd you say?
I don't think that's what's happening on
my
end.
I think you just really want to be around me and you don't know how to say it.
Anyway.
I love my family. When we were at dinner, Bryn goes, I love my drink and I love my food. Thank you for making it, Daddy. I go, you're welcome. And then Maven goes, I love my drink. And I love my food. And I love my daddy. And then she goes, but I miss mommy. I love mommy. And Bryn's like, I love mommy. Like before they were just paying lip service. And they're like, ooh, there's a thing we actually love is mommy. And I go, you know, you guys, I love mommy too. And then everyone's like, mommy.
Good.
Then yeah. They ate all the green beans.
This next segment is called Did You Knows? It's where we share some parenting fun facts.
Oh boy. So anytime I'm reading stuff and parenting topics come up, I'm like, got to bookmark this for the podcast. And there's a bunch of random little things that pop up. It's just like literally a tidbit, a fun fact, and I copy and paste it. And I've never really used any of them because it's not a larger topic. So this week, I'm just rattling some off.
Yeah, just shoot them out. Shoot them out at us.
I'm just going to shoot them out at you.
Rattle them down.
Like a tennis ball out of an American Gladiator's
cannon.
Throw
them up, toss them up, give it a whack.
Give it a full back swing, and here we go. There's some themes in here because some of them came from the same spot, and then some of them are just totally random. Are you ready, Beth?
I couldn't be more ready.
These are truly random, did you know? In 2012, an 11-year-old boy ran away from his mother while shopping close to Manchester Airport. He then boarded a plane to Rome, bypassing security without a passport or boarding card, and then into a seat by tagging behind another family. He was on his way to Italy before the crew realized. True story. What do you think our son would be capable of such a thing?
You know,
by the way, this is the plot of Home Alone 2.
I've seen an interview where Molly Shannon says she did this as a kid. She and her friend like snuck on an airplane.
Oh yeah, I heard that too.
And they flew to New York City and then they just called their parents and were like, hey, like this happened. And their parents were like, what? Well, okay. And this is like, I guess the 70s or whatever. And yeah. So their parents like called the airline or whatever, or like asked them to like talk to the airline and be like, you're responsible for this because you flew two kids to like whatever. So they just hung out in New York for a little bit and then like flew back and the airline just like let them back. It just is crazy considering the amount of security we have these days.
Well, this happened in 2012, which is insane. I mean, but you could see how it happened, like where a kid is part of a group, and it's literally, again, what happens in Home Alone 2, where it's just like, oh, that's, you're not counting every kid perfectly.
But who's like with that, whose kid was that they didn't contact the airline that the kid was missing?
Well, they were shopping close to the airport. They weren't even at the airport. The kid wandered into the airport and then onto a plane.
Where was this?
In England.
Oh, wow.
Manchester. That's insane. You want to hear something else that's also insane?
Sure.
Joseph Jackson, father of Michael Jackson, tried to teach his kids a lesson about leaving their bedroom windows open. So one night while his son Michael was sleeping, He wore a mask, climbed in through the window, and shouted at him. Michael Jackson would later have reoccurring nightmares about being kidnapped from his bedroom.
Joe Jackson is like an abusive dad psychopath.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I saw the made-for-TV movie where Michael befriends a mouse and he sings to him in the kitchen by himself.
There's no natural way to turn five children into like professional performers.
There's no natural way.
No.
Well, I wouldn't call being in a rock band natural. You know, like, do you know what I mean? Yeah, it takes, wait, no, you know what? I agree. I rewind everything I just said. I agree with you 100%.
I don't know. I mean, I think kids could perform, but I think that like the pace that they were, I don't know. Who knows?
I mean, I don't want my kids auditioning unless like they were really into it and like they want to go and like
I think
be
it,
actors.
It also, I think, depends a lot on the age of the kid and like what.
Well, what I found when I'm shooting something and when you're on set, they treat actors, you know, really well in generally, and they baby you. And I had to learn right away not to like be proactive about where I need to be. And it would just mess things up. You just sit there and you literally don't go anywhere until somebody comes and gets you and takes you to another place. And they ask you if you need something and you can't help but feel like you're better than other people. I mean, you don't think you are. You know, you're acting nice and humble, but your emotions, you just feel special. And if you're a kid who's like doing movies and you're on set like a lot of days in a row, that's going to mess with you. Like that sense of entitlement is not natural.
Well, and I think also just for anyone, like any person, the people you're spending the majority of your time with are going to impact your outlook or whatever. So if they're spending more time there than with like family and teacher, you know, like it's just going to impact their view of the world, which like in some cases, if they're like being well taken care of, whatever. I feel like this is like a long tangent.
Take it.
I mean, like if they're being looked after, if they have, you know, someone on set who's looking out for them, I'm sure there's situations where it's fine, you know?
Yeah, it's just a weird, like the best way for a set to function is to like be helpless. Because if you try to help, you ruin things. So you just have to turn off that part of your brain. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
Baby tossing is a yearly non-religious festival in Solapur, India. Babies are thrown from a 15-meter tower.
What?
That's like 50 feet. And catchers hold a sheet for babies to land on.
Where is this?
This is in India. There have been no reported fatal incidents in the 500 years that they've carried on this tradition.
Oh my God.
My notes include the next sentence. Watch the clip above.
If I watched the clip, would I be comforted or horrified? I'm probably horrified. I shouldn't watch the clip.
No, don't watch people throw babies out of a tower.
If there's like one way you really, if you're working in media, if you really want to trigger a lot of people severely, is please include depictions of harm coming to babies.
Like Michael Jackson holding a baby over a balcony.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I remember when that happened thinking like, oh, that's weird, but not being so outraged until you have a baby. And then I saw it again and I was like, no, no, no. Anyway, yeah. I guess I'm growing. My empathy is growing. who started that tradition?
Of holding babies over balconies?
No, of throwing them out of towers onto sheets. I don't think it was a mother.
Definitely not. It was like, for that tradition to have even started, do you know how many reluctant women had to hand over their babies to men who were like competing with each other for like, to show how cool they are? Like, that is
insane. I can drop my baby 15 meters.
Like, that's such an insane tradition. All these men being like, do you know how brave I am? I'll literally drop my baby from 50 feet. Do you know how like insecure you have to be to need that thrill?
I want to give, you know, we don't have full context here, so we should be reluctant to pass full judgment on
okay,
this.
Okay, I can't wait for the emails. Please, honestly, if someone has a defense of this, I want to hear it. I'm I'm intellectually curious as to what led you there.
I got criticized for not taking off the winter jacket of my kids in their car seats. And to those people, I'm equally reckless. And maybe they're right. They're not
interesting
right.
Point.
This is more reckless. But no fatalities. No fatal incidents. It didn't say no incidents. In Bali, babies cannot touch the ground until they reach 3 months of age. It is believed that a newborn's purity can be defiled through any contact with the unclean ground. Finally, at 3 months, the family holds a ceremony where the baby sets foot upon the ground for the first time. I have to admit, when I first read this, I read it as 3 years old, and I thought it was more insane than the tower throwing. 3 months, very different.
I think that's an interesting ceremony. I mean, prior to 3 months, there's no reason for a baby to be on the ground.
Yeah, it is.
They're
very
so
much
tiny.
Like, hey, welcome to the world, but now welcome to Earth.
Interesting.
I mean, that makes much more sense how that
they're in some
started.
Sort of life purgatory.
That's right. You've arrived, but you have not yet landed. I like it. I'll do that next for our next child, which will never happen. Well, does the bassinet count? Just the ground, the floor?
No, I don't think the bassinet would count.
I think that's probably a lot of babies that don't hit the ground until 3 months.
Yeah, you wouldn't have any reason to unless you're like really at a loss for surfaces.
This isn't even weird, Bali.
They can't roll.
Ugh. This isn't a fun fact. All right, here's a fun fact. Traditionally, there's a theme here in going in these. Irish couples save the top tier of the wedding cake for their first child's christening. The cake is served to guests, and then a few crumbs are sprinkled over the baby's forehead to bless it with good luck. Generally, there is a good amount of whiskey in the cake already, but couples often save some of their wedding champagne as well to use it to wet the baby's head for good luck. How do you save the champagne?
Both of these sound a little gross. Like,
it sounds made up. Like, what would the Irish do?
What would the Irish do?
Yeah, they put crumbs and booze on their baby's head in a Catholic church.
This is not, like, if I was thinking of Irish stereotypes, I would not have come to this.
Sounded right to me.
It would be like they're putting a potato on his forehead and the...
I am offended. As an Irish man, 50%. Never mind. All right, ready for this? We journey further across the globe.
Further and further. Around the globe we go.
I don't know how to pronounce this, but Kisai parents in Kenya... do not make eye contact with their newborn babies, as eye contact is a form of authority and they don't want to bestow such power on a baby. Mothers carry their babies everywhere but do not indulge their young ones' cries. Power move. I got to say, right now, when I first read this, it was a long time ago, I was like, that's weird. But based on sort of like the power dynamics we're reestablishing with our kids right now, and the power of not giving them your attention beyond the first explanation and just focusing on other things, I sort of get this one where I'm like, if I pay attention to you, it's because there's a purpose.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff, I think, in societies where people are still doing a lot of baby wearing and just like carrying the baby on them for a long time, where it makes sense to me, like, why those babies seem to be like just... aside from that, less needy or whatever, but it's just not practical in our society at this point unless you can take off like a full year from work. You know what I mean?
It's just not practical to strap on a baby
and
ignore it.
I mean, if
it.
You can take a full year off from work and you want to do that, like more power to you. It just seems like difficult to imagine.
Yeah, it's the do not indulge their young ones' cries. I feel like I need more context as to what that means. I mean, I
think that's an interesting
I'm on board with that.
Solution. It's like, yeah, okay, you're upset right now.
I assume that means you're ignoring whining and crying that there's no immediate danger.
If they're baby wearing all the time, it seems like the babies are probably eating when they want to. Like, it doesn't sound like they're denying the kids any needs. They're just not indulging. I don't know what that means. They're not.
They don't want to bestow any power on a baby. Yeah, you know what? Looking at somebody is a challenging thing, but when you know you see someone look at you, you can't ignore that because they are showing you that you are front and center in their mind, and that can be a challenging and aggressive thing. But it also sort of gives you, it can also give you power because you're
it's
worth
sort of
paying
like
attention to.
They're treating the babies like they're sort of like student surgeons or something. They're like, you get to watch life. You're like interns here.
But you
can be here and hang out and see what the world is like, but like it's not about you yet. You don't know what you're doing.
We're gonna
here.
Act like you're not here.
Just like you chill out for a minute until you get the hang of how we do things here on the job of Earth.
Interesting. Vietnamese parents potty train their babies using a whistle. They're able to potty train their babies by 9 months of age, almost a year faster than most Western children. That is at least a year worth of diapers parents can save money on. When the baby fusses or gives a sign that they need to go, parents hold them over the toilet and whistle. These babies are then able to control themselves by the time they can walk. Very Captain Von Trapp.
I mean, so this is, again, one of those things that, like, I'm think in theory, it's, like, fine if you have the time to do this. But then when we sort of, like, start to adopt things like this, because I've heard of sort of people trying to replicate something like this in the United States, it's, like, that act requires, like, an ever-vigilant mother.
Yeah.
And I feel like these are the kinds of practices that are adopted by like religious communities sometimes to like force women to stay home. Like it's like there's all these things that you need to be doing at home. Like you need to constantly make sure you're watching to see if your baby pees.
I mean, that's how we did it. We had a week off. The first time I tried to
I guess what I'm thinking of, which maybe is not the same as the example you brought up, is this like thing where people do with young babies where they like have them not wearing pants for a while and they're holding a baby over a toilet when they think it has to go and it's like a kid that has no awareness yet.
Like that only works if you're carrying them the whole
time.
You
have to be watching them every second. Like, do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
I mean, that is that is how we potty trained Bryn. And
yeah, but
Maven
it was like
just, we had
a full year later.
A woman at daycare say, hey, do you mind if I potty train her this week? And we're like, sure. And she did it. And it was crazy.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, we did it when they were like two or three. And the, like.
Yeah, not at 9 months.
When you do it at 9 months, you're really like.
You're all
this
your
is a person who doesn't even understand language. Like.
I tried to do potty train Bryn when Maven was an infant. And I was like, I'm going to do it. I read the book. I paid attention to he was naked. And I just watched him. But I had a baby in my arms. And then suddenly he was like, oh. And I was like, you have to pee? And then I have to put the baby on the floor carefully but quickly. And I just showed Bryn all panic. And like he's terrified. And I had a nervous breakdown within 4 hours.
I mean,
we gave up.
I do want to say, I think some kids respond to stuff like this so much sooner than others. And I think if their parents are picking up on that and they're like, I want to do this now, it's like totally fine. I just think there's like sometimes this expectation that like if it can be done, moms should quit their jobs and do it.
Just quit your jobs and buy a whistle. Get that baby potty trained.
Just do everything.
All right, I just have a few more. Here we go. Ready? Little babies are already able to distinguish beauty traits. This is not a cultural specific one. Research from the University of Texas found babies prefer pretty faces to plain faces. Oh boy, society.
Surprise, surprise.
Hardwired. We don't need to talk about that.
Well, I feel like we've had this conversation in the past, but it's beauty is like perceived often as like symmetrical features. Mm-hmm. And symmetrical features is like genetically were a sign of good genes or whatever, right?
Yes,
like
that is the dominating theory.
So anyway, it's like a primal
and say, oh, this face does not have an infectious disease. that will kill me. So yeah. I trust it and love it. All right, I'm going to skip that one because it's about teenagers, and I don't want to deal with that yet. Last one. Do you know there's a push to replace the skull and crossbones as the international symbol for poison because of the popularity of pirates? Many children no longer see the symbol as a warning. The proposed alternative is the Mr. Yuck symbol. You ever seen the Mr. Yuck? He's got a bright green face and he's going,
ugh! That sounds familiar. That is so funny. That's like a...
It's Johnny Depp's fault.
It just reminds me of one of those like weird internet columns that would be written by like George Will or something, where he'd be like criticizing millennials and be like, they're too into pirates. We can't even have clear signage.
We can't even have poison anymore.
Everyone's talking about pirates and smoking weed and Ocasio-Cortez. Anyway, that's
as political as this segment is gonna get. And now it's time for Listeners Wanna Knows. This is where we read some mail from our listeners. This email comes to us from Sarah. This is actually from a while back, and I just found it again. I was like, yeah, we should read this. That's the backstory on this letter. Hey, y'all. Love your podcast and have spent the last few days bringing it.
But I'm gonna binging.
I think it's binging.
That's autocorrect.
That's an autocorrect. I spent the last few days bringing it. My partner and I are actually trying, and I spend my days taking care of my friend's 9-month-old while she works. So needless to say, babies and parenting are on my mind literally all the time. I wanted to get your opinion on something. We have been trying for almost 2 years now, and we finally decided to start figuring this out with a doctor 6 months ago. Now, it seems the treatments are working, and we are closer to parenthood than ever before. Because of this, I have thrown myself into research out of excitement and a crippling fear of being an awful parent. Meanwhile, my dear, sweet partner is just like, whatever about it. He is excited about possibly being a dad, but he doesn't seem to feel like he should be studying for it. It's a very we'll figure it out attitude. I feel like the difference in our anxiety levels about this comes from the fact that my childhood was incredibly tumultuous and he was raised by literal angels. I'm going to take that literally because you wrote literal. The 10-year gap in age probably doesn't help. I'm 24. He's 34. So how can I talk to him about it to make him understand that this is a journey that I'm excited to take with him? And I think we both need to prepare as much as we can. So much of this seems to usually fall on moms, and it seems dads are generally unprepared for what parenting is, but that could be my crazy feminism rearing its ugly head again. Anyway, I would love to hear some feedback, and sorry this went so long. Don't apologize. Love, Sarah. P.S. It might not matter, but for context, he's from El Salvador, and we both grew up very poor, and he is anxious about preparing financially for the baby, but not so much academically or emotionally.
Okay. Wow. This is all so relevant to discussions we've had on mm-hmm. here about us. I think, you know, we obviously have some advice for both of them, which is that I do think she could probably try to relax a little more and not assume that, like, I understand why it feels like the weight of the world is resting on your shoulders when you're literally like trying to keep someone alive inside of you. But at a certain point, you have to like, I think, accept that you don't have, and this is like the craziest thing of parenthood, is accepting that you don't have control over everything.
Yeah.
And so you just have to live your life. And so I think she can calm down, but I do think her husband needs to not necessarily get more worried, but he needs to take more practical steps to help out with the things that she's concerned about, which are reasonable concerns, I think, probably about her health and the birth and, you know, having things ready for a person to live in their home that they've never had before, which is like a very needy little person.
I think, well, you know, that, yeah, in the day and age we live in, if you didn't, you know, if you didn't have a thing prepared or like there's, you don't know the routine yet, it is so easy to get that information or to get the object or the thing that you need.
Okay. But I will say this, you do need a lot of things for a baby and you do have to plan in advance. Right. And I think the thing that I think is a recurring theme I've noticed with men is that when families are going through these kinds of transitions that are like stressful and important, you do tend to like laser focus in on something like finances, which is like not, again, something that can't be controlled and fully always. And you don't like broaden your scope to the other issues at play that are like directly going to affect the quality of life in ways that you can control.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that there's obviously it's both ends need to be. I say that like, oh, there's always something you can figure out. Not to say don't plan anything. Yeah, you should prepare. You should do your research and you should know the things like, you need. But also
I
know
think a
that
lot of
like,
times in, during pregnancy, this is when it, there's like finally a big joint task that you have to do together. Mm-hmm. And men's response to a group project is like, don't worry, it'll shake out. And then women are like expected to like pick up the slack and make it happen.
Well, I think at least from the male side, which I certainly relate to the attitude of like, we'll figure it out. It'll be okay. Is that even if your partner is overstressing and is like trying to worry about all of the things at every moment and could benefit from some relaxing, even if that's true, what's almost more important, and now I'm not going to say more important because you should help and be prepared, but it's also meeting that person where they are, not dismissing their concerns, meeting them from that place of stress and fear.
Okay, but I do want to stress that the concerns that women tend to care about planning for a baby are very practical. Like, this baby needs a place to sleep. I'm going to need some things so that my breasts don't leak milk everywhere all the time. Like there's like a million little things like that, that you have to keep track of. And then the emotional like workload of keeping track of like literally a million little things, and also like make sure you're taking your vitamins, and you're like also currently like fully nauseous all the time, and you're like just like getting fatter and ravenously hungry. Like, you as a woman, you're expected to deal with like all of that, and it's so easy for men to be like, oh, you're only bringing up one thing to me now, so to me that seems like one small thing, so I'm just gonna chill about it.
Yeah, there's two big sides to that. Do your research. Think through it.
That's why men, I think, do need to be like reading the books and paying attention. Like, at least do some research about pregnancy and childbirth and babies so that you understand like sort of some of the weight of what's about to happen.
Yes, that is the practical side of prep and planning. Do that. And then the other side of that is realizing that you're not the one going through it and that there's a person who has a totally different framework and therefore set of anxiety and fears and emotions and all the crazy hormones and all that, and that you can't relate to that. You don't know what that is. And so being open and available and sympathetic, blah, 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 to that. I think I'm not saying that I did all that perfect. I certainly did not. But in retrospect, it's easy to go like, oh, okay. Yeah, no, I was just like Googling one thing I got obsessed with. And I was like, strollers or something.
And then like anything like mom and baby related is so inflammatory. So like if you Google it, you're just going to get some of the most extreme opinions presented as absolute fact.
Oh,
like all over the place. You know what I mean? Like, it's very hard to get a gauge on if you're not doing sort of like an exhaustive search for certain things.
You know, the question in this email is that, well, was it? One, you're not crazy, and you do not have crazy. This is not crazy feminism rearing its ugly head. This is you taking care of yourself, and you're preparing to take care of your child.
What happens to any rational person when they suddenly have a human being growing inside their body is they start asking questions, and that's a good sign. So, continue.
You know, her question is, how do you talk to him to make him understand that that she basically she wants him to participate more? I
guess just make him listen to this. Maybe if he hears it from me,
you'll
sound nicer in comparison to me.
You just say, "Oh, a podcast answered my email. You should listen to it," and that's all you say.
Ooh, a trick.
But we think you're...
A surprise.
I don't know what your name is, Bella, but we think you're great, so we're not judging you. I can tell you that I failed in a lot of ways in all this regard, and it was only after failing and the baby being born, in retrospect, that I was like, I sort of get why that was hard, huh?
If they both work on the things we say, it will resolve both sides of it. Like, if she's... presenting her concerns, maybe if she can, I don't know how she's presenting them, but maybe if she can present them a little more calmly with like clear action items for him, maybe he'll respond to that better, because men are thick bricks that need clear directives.
Give him a list.
Be like,
give me boxes that I can check off.
These are the terms of our agreement to continue this relationship, where you put a person inside of me, and explain it to him very clearly. And if he steps up and does these things, she will in turn be less anxious.
I think we solved it. I think all your problems are solved. She apologized for going on so long. This is a very reasonable length of an email, Sarah.
You matter, Sarah.
You do.
Your
don't apologize.
Are valid.
You know what? You can not apologize and also not like be a jerk. You can just own it. I was about to go into a larger.
Okay. Okay, just leave her alone. She's had enough advice.
I know. Just realized how belittling I was about to be. Sarah, I'm not in a position to. You're great. You wrote this email and you've got very worthwhile. Thoughts, feelings,
and
questions.
That's enough. Just
and
leave
we're
her
validating
alone.
You.
She's left. She's left the building.
No. Let me tell you why you're great.
Okay.
I don't think you get it. And this has been Mr. Zawada Knows. This has been another episode of We Knows Parenting.
If you guys would like to submit a question, share a story, give some advice, or suggest an impossible parenting hypothetical for our Would You Know segment, you can email us at weknowspod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 347-384-7396.
Check out weknowsparenting.com for all the information about merch, how to get in contact with us, live events, all that. Check it out. Also, social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at WeKnowsPod. You can also check out our individual Instagrams if you want to see our mentioned What Our Children Do While We're Sleeping series on my Instagram, at McNen. Search Peter McNerney, you'll find me.
Search Beth Newell, you'll find me.
Yeah, and until next time, babies, bye!